Charge is with us a little bit earlier than usual. We may turn this into a thing. We'd prefer to turn this into a thing because we like talking to him for a longer period of time. And this is a very sought-after guest. Paul Charchi with us, as he is every Thursday during football season, the king of fantasy podcasts, Fantasy Football Weekly and CHOP. You can get those podcasts anywhere you get a podcast, at Paul Charchian on X on Twitter. So before we get into fantasy football discussion, it was a Monday night football game, so I know you watched it. What's your reaction to Jaden Daniels so far?
So promising, right? What I love is that we've talked about him every week, and I was bemoaning that they weren't opening up the downfield passing for him yet, and felt optimistic that it would come. And I thought Cliff Kingsbury, understandably, was giving him a lot of short stuff just to build confidence, get some completions, let your guys do things. You and I lamented that Terry McLaurin wasn't involved. It was just so great to see it all come together. That deep right sideline touchdown pass was just glorious. Not only was the pass terrific, but Terry McLaurin, a fantastic job. We need, we need other people to step up more in this offense, and maybe that'll come around. I don't see a path to other people really meaningfully stepping up, but maybe there's more there. Maybe we're going to get a little something out of Luke McCaffrey. Losing Eckler is not trivial to this offense. I loved what I had seen from Eckler, and you don't just like give that role to Brian Robinson. You're just not the same guy. And I think it'll be fascinating to see what Cliff Kingsbury does to try to overcome some of that. And I wonder if Zach Ertz isn't going to get a lot of that, 5, 6, 7, 8 yard downfield stuff that Eckler had been getting, a lot of short catches. And I wonder if Zach Ertz isn't going to see some extra use here this coming week.
So I'm going to ask you the same question that I just asked callers, because, I'll set it up by, saying 3 games is way too early to declare anything about anybody. Jaden Daniels is the answer. Caleb Williams isn't. It's 3 games. We're NFL fans lifelong. We understand how these things change and can change on a dime. So my belief is, while I am, Charch, the biggest Jaden Daniels fan and have been for over a year, he was the guy that I wanted all along. I still would say it's too early to know for sure that they got it right. But the question that I ask callers, and I'll ask you, is when is it okay to say they got it right? How long does it take? Is it a week 7? Is it a year 3? I'll give you my answer in a second, and it wasn't a quantitative answer. But what would your answer be to that question? You're an NFL historian in many ways. You know the ups and downs of young quarterbacks. When will it be okay to declare they got it right?
Well, okay. First, I'm emotional about these things. I'm an emotional guy. I tend to view and live in the moment. And I think in this moment, if the Bears could do it again, they would change their pick. And I base that on primarily the poise and composure of the two people involved. Caleb Williams doesn't, he still looks like he's trying to figure everything out on the fly. Jaden Daniels, he looks like he's been doing this his whole life. Just the composure level, the poise, some of those intangible things that don't always get better. Those things to me all point towards Daniels. To answer your question more specifically, I would say for me, approximately this time next year, about 3 games in, like right now, Will Levis to me is not, I think we can pass judgment on Will Levis. This thing is not going to work out. I give me 3 weeks into his sophomore year, I don't see anything coming from Will Levis. That to me is a sign of a player that I don't think is going to necessarily get better. I'm worried about other young quarterbacks, Anthony Richardson and others. But I mean, just the reasonable answer is, okay, if you're going to start these kids as rookies, then and for their whole rookie year, I think they probably deserve the right to get better over the entire offseason and get at least a few games into the sample size the next year to see what we've got. So I would say about this time next year is when you could feel really good with like 90% accuracy on establishing the career path for these guys. And I don't think you'd find a lot of examples of players who struggled for an entire rookie year, played most of their rookie year, struggled, and then struggled through three or four games of their next year, and then it still came together. That would be, I think that would, those would be outliers. I don't have any examples for you.
Well, I mean,
what do you think?
You know, last week, weekend alone, I mean, Sam Darnold, Andy Dalton, I mean, we saw the resurgence of Geno Smith. I think Baker Mayfield, I think we count these guys out way too early in general, and I think we've been reminded that of that in recent years. I think what the real outlier is the Patrick Mahomes, the Dan Marino starts to their career. My answer to the question, by the way, is I'll know when he faces adversity. I don't think you can really measure anybody until, you know, they're under the gun. People are calling them out for a couple of bad performances, a couple of bad plays and in losses. Let's see how he handles those moments, because right now, you know, he didn't face any real adversity at LSU other than a bad defense, and right now he's got the same bad defense. But that's my answer to the question, because Dan Marino, Patrick Mahomes basically threw six touchdown passes and no picks in his second game. I mean, it started great in year two, and it's never stopped. You know, Dan Marino, the same thing. Once he started, man, it was obvious he was brilliant, and if you were waiting to see something else and waiting to see him face adversity, he didn't start facing adversity until the question about can he win it all started to pop up, and that's 5, 6, 7 years into his career. Most of the greatest faced those moments. You know, Peyton Manning threw, what, 28 interceptions in his rookie year? So I'm waiting on that. Maybe he'll be Mahomes. Maybe he'll be Marino. And maybe what we saw Monday night is just going to get better, although it'd be hard for it to get better than what he did Monday night.
You know, where I differ from what you just said is this. Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith is a very different storyline than what we're talking about as rookies and when we can start to evaluate rookies. Those are guys that were basically flushed from their original teams, sometimes the second and third teams after that, and then had a relatively late stage resurgence to their careers. And I don't think that's relative to this conversation about when can
that's
we start
fair.
Evaluating.
How about Josh rookies? Allen? Would Josh Allen be a better example of a guy that people were questioning well into his second year?
Yeah, that's a very fair example. And deep into his second year, right? I think the whole first 2 years were really sketchy, and then the third year exploded. They brought in Stephon Diggs, and, you know, it all clicked for him. So, you know, that's a great case study of where, you know, of somebody who got farther along and then became truly great. But we're also talking about, when you're talking about Mahomes and Josh Allen and Dan Marino, we're talking about Hall of Fame level talent here too.
Yeah, right.
But you don't always know it in the moment, right? You know, Jaden Daniels might be a Hall of Fame level talent. We don't know for sure.
So, I don't know the answer to this question, but you and I talked about this last week because it was a major NFL topic, which was where are the touchdown passes? Where are the passing yards? I actually didn't follow the storyline, but it seemed to me that passing yards and touchdown passes were up in week three. Is that right or wrong?
A little. We're still languishing, though, by a lot compared to previous seasons. The quarterback play way, way down. You know, we're looking at in passing yards way, like, incredibly down. You know, these numbers are not scientific. This is just the top of my head. Typical NFL week, we've got 4, 5, 6 300-yard passers. This year, we're getting 0, 1, 2. That's it. It's bad. I mean, Caleb Williams, who we were just bashing right now, is 17th in passing yards. The quarterback play is just, there's so much bad quarterbacking out there. Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson, Anthony Richardson, Justin Herbert's play, Jacoby Brissett. It's been, you know, Bryce Young already benched. It's been a really rough year for passing output. And the tight end position, by the way, you want a languishing position. Oh, just absolute disaster with all the so-called sure thing tight ends just going belly up, injury, bad performances. That whole position just killing fantasy managers.
Was the most prolific passing year of, say, the last 10, the pandemic year, 2020?
don't know, maybe.
Because I just remember it was such an advantage offensively for road teams because there was never any crowd issues.
Yeah, so back then.
Didn't everybody light it up in 2020?
We did. So, Mahomes was there. Your leading passer in 2020 by yardage, Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson was number one. We still had Tom Brady in the league. We still had Matt Ryan in the league. We still had Aaron Rodgers operating at the height of his powers. Russell Wilson was still good. Philip Rivers was in the league and finished 10th in yards in 2020. So we still had some of those really great veteran players were still there and performing at a high level in 2020.
Well, I'm assuming that Sam Darnold right now is the number one fantasy QB, right?
He currently in fantasy points right now.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't run. So, I mean, that's where, he's currently fourth. And the guys in front of him are Josh Allen, Jaden Daniels, and Lamar Jackson because they're rushing and the rushing touchdowns count more and faster than passing yards do in most fantasy.
So, where is Daniels right now on your quarterback rankings fantasy wise?
That's a great question for this particular week. I'll pull this up at fantasylife.com where you can get all of my player rankings available every week, including guillotine-specific rankings. I have Daniels at quarterback 4 this week. 4.
Wow.
I know.
Fantasylife.com for player rankings.
Yes.
Who's number 1?
Kyler Murray against your team, and I don't have to explain why.
No, you don't. Historically bad right now. I talked about this on yesterday's show. I don't know if you follow the Aaron Schatz DVOA metric, but Washington's three-game start to a season, eighth worst in 45 years of that measurement. And yet the only team with a winning record in his top 12 of the worst defenses of all time over the first 3 weeks. And he essentially says you really can't get out of it and you can't become a playoff team or a playoff contender without greatness at quarterback. And he, asked the question, does Washington have that? Doesn't look bad so far, but we're not making declarations after three games. All right, let's talk about tonight. How good is Malik Nabers fantasy-wise?
Oh, geez. What a stud this kid has turned into and so quickly. You just don't see players that do what he's doing through three games, what Nabers is doing, that don't turn into superstars. I mean, just the track is right here. He's the league's most heavily targeted receiver. Kevin, he's averaging 12 targets per game.
He had 18 here 2 weeks ago.
Right. He ranks number one in air yard percentage for any team. He's eating up 48% of the Giants' air yards. He's top 10 in end zone target percentage. You've already seen, you saw the play. He's got superstar caliber body control, separation. In this game tonight, he'll be matched up probably for a lot of the game against Stephon Diggs' brother, Trayvon Diggs, the cornerback for Dallas, who was great 2 years ago, but then he lost last season to ACL. That'll be a fascinating one-on-one matchup. But Malik Nabers right now looks like just an every week no-brainer in your lineup starter, and just he's on a path for superstardom.
Is he your number one receiver, player rankings-wise?
No, he is. Let's take a look. Malik Nabers right now. It's going to be in that conversation. He is number 8 right now. Number 8 right now. Marvin Harrison against your team, number 6. Maybe I need to move that
You got the backup tight end in Arizona as a start against Washington's defense. By the way, McBride may not play.
And it's funny you say that. I've got Trey McBride in a bunch of leagues, and so I am looking at the backup tight end if I have to pivot that way. That is probably what I'm going to do rather than try to find
who's the backup tight end. I don't even know.
He scored actually a touchdown 2 weeks ago. It's Elijah Higgins is your backup tight end. And not the name you need to know, but against your team in a pinch, that's a plausible starter. The other guy I like, Michael Wilson, their other starting wide receiver, right? Basically anybody. What we're saying is basically all the starters against your secondary.
Not a good matchup. If you've got Prescott, what are you thinking right now?
Well, I'm pretty optimistic right now in some ways. The running game has been terrible, and so Prescott's throwing a lot. And the catches, though, I don't think defenses are not going to be respecting Zeke and Rico Dowdle for much longer. And I think that part worries me. What Dak's done a really good job with, Kevin, he's been able to find all his secondary and tertiary receivers in a way that he hadn't been in the past. We're seeing, you know, CeeDee Lamb is obviously awesome, and, you know, he's getting plenty of targets, but, you know, Brandon Cooks, Jalen Tolbert, Jake Ferguson did not figure to be big parts of this offense, but they really have been. And Dak's ball distribution has been fantastic. So that's the part I like about what the Cowboys have been able to do with Dak Prescott, is get real production out of players other than CeeDee Lamb and not turn their offense as one-dimensional as it was last year.
I mean, this is crazy to ask, because after the first week in preseason and joint practices, I mean, Daniel Jones was completely written off. Not that he hasn't been before, but has he resurrected himself a little bit as a fantasy player in particular?
He has. You know, this. You know, the Vikings, that week one loss to the Vikings looked really bad. At the time, everybody thought the Vikings were terrible and that he lost this bad defense. Turns out the Vikings might have the league's best defense, or second. Steelers are the best. Vikings might have the second best defense. In the two games since then, Daniel Jones has completed 65% of his passes. He's thrown 4 touchdowns, 0 picks. And the thing that has shocked me as much as anything, he's looked really nimble despite coming off that ACL, running well. He's getting dialed up for 6 designed runs per game. Did not see that coming. Those things help fantasy use. And Dallas is the opponent tonight. They've allowed quarterback rushing touchdowns in back-to-back games, so the running might be a factor here. Daniel Jones, if you're in a spot at quarterback, and a lot of people are right now because of the bad play, he's not off the board as a potential helper tonight.
What do you think about my quarterback, Patrick Mahomes? Is he still just an automatic default starter?
Nope. Not at all.
No?
No. And the big problem is, the downfield passing is, like last year, the downfield passing is not there. Get this. Passes over 15 yards. And when we think of Patrick Mahomes, Kevin, we're thinking about these long downfield completions, because that's what he gave us for the first, whatever, 4 years of his career, signature plays downfield. On passes of over 15 yards, Patrick Mahomes ranks 27th in attempts and 15th in completions. That's killed him. They thought Xavier Worthy and his deep speed would unlock more and better downfield passing. That has not materialized yet. And Worthy's only 3 games into his career, so it could happen. Get this. If we go back to week 8 of last year, Kevin, that spans 11 regular season games, which is a meaningful sample size in the NFL. Do you want to guess how many times Patrick Mahomes has been a top 10 fantasy quarterback since week 8 of last year?
0.
1. Yeah. That's it. Since week eight of last year, his average finish is quarterback 16, which means most leagues are 12. That means more often than almost every time, you'd have been better off starting somebody else over Patrick Mahomes.
Well, my somebody else is Geno Smith. What do you think of him?
He's played well. I'm shocked at how well he's played. And by the way, you know, and the play last year wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. But Geno, I think Geno has looked better than hoped. I think they knew what they were doing when they got rid of Shane Waldron, and now he's in Chicago with
Chicago,
all the various
problems. And some people are blaming him, by the way, for Caleb Williams' start, saying it's super complex and too complex for, you know, a first year starter. But go ahead, I digress.
Geno Smith leads the NFL in completion percentage, and he's doing it behind a battered, lousy offensive line. He's throwing
Jaden Daniels leads the league in completion percentage. I know that. It's over 80%.
All right. I'm sorry. He's at 75%. And honestly, I was assuming that was number one, because at 75% is normally number one. That's usually how this works. You know, he's not lighting up fantasy box scores, but he's been pretty darn good with a touchdown pass in every game. And the last couple of games, the yardage numbers have ticked up. He's just turned into a really solid player at age 33, Geno Smith.
You know what? I always, when you watched him throw, it looked like a competent NFL passer. You know, he's 6'3", 6'4", and stands in that pocket, and he can gun it, man. He's got a big-time arm. I don't know what it is about him. I shouldn't have liked him because he went to West Virginia, and I'm a Terp. But I always, for whatever reason, thought if he gets in the right kind of system, I always felt that way about Darnold, too, for some reason. I'm happy for Geno Smith. We'll see. They've played nobody, right? It's the, you know, they played a depleted Dolphins team. They beat up on the, they barely survived the Patriots. And what was the opener that they had? I'm forgetting now. Denver, maybe?
Denver. Yeah, it was Denver in the opener. Yep.
Yeah.
And they,
All right, so back to just overall football questions. What?
Well, hang on. Do we have 3 minutes?
We do. For you,
we've already run long. I know you're better. My favorite bet that I've unearthed of the entire regular season is tonight, so I want to tell you about it.
Okay.
Devin Singletary against the Cowboys. And the way I would angle this is I would ladder bet over 60 yards, over 80 yards, over 100 yards. Anytime right. touchdowns, plus 105. First touchdowns, plus 600. First, some love for Devin Singletary. He ranks number one in missed tackle rate in the NFL. 41% of his runs with a missed tackle rate. He's correspondingly ranks number one in total missed tackles. And he's one of the NFL's few remaining bell cow runners. Non-Singletary runners in New York are only averaging 3 carries per game. And he's the only one who touches the ball from inside the 5-yard line. No other runners touch the ball from inside the 5. But here's the thing. Dallas, get a load of these running metrics.
Oh, it's terrible.
They rank dead last in run defense by Pro Football Focus, and it's not close. They rank dead last in run defense success rate. They're last in rush defense EPA. They're last in rushing yards allowed. They're 26th in missed tackles. Dallas has allowed 6 rushing touchdowns to runners. That's the league's most. And if you throw in quarterback rushing touchdowns, now they're at 8 rushing touchdowns allowed. It is staggering how bad this Mike Zimmer-led run defense has been for Dallas. And Singletary, I think, just people don't realize how good he's been. And that is a very strong play tonight.
I like it. I'm not a big prop bet guy, but I love Singletary. I loved him coming out of Florida Atlantic. I think he just has always had that really good vision, and he should still be in Buffalo, really. What was I going to ask you? Oh, two things. One, I mean, it's only week 4, but Dallas has to win tonight, right? I mean, have you seen what they have coming up? They have Pittsburgh next week on the road. Then it's Detroit at home, the 49ers on the road, the Falcons on the road, the Eagles and the Texans. And then they play Washington, and maybe we'll be good, you know, when they face us. This is must-win territory. I'm not saying he'll fire McCarthy if they lose tonight. Jerry doesn't fire coaches in season.
No.
But this is – they better win this, or I think that their season goes south.
Has it already gone south?
Maybe.
I mean, it's already happened, and we don't know. It is early, but man, and the Cowboys' offense has been okay. This defense is brutal, and I'm telling, this thing's gonna be way closer than I think people realize. Again, Giants have looked like a legitimate team in back to back weeks, and honestly, more legitimate than the Cowboys have the last 2 weeks. I do not share your optimism that this is an automatic game for Dallas just because they have to
I'm not optimistic at all. It would not shock me at all if the Giants win tonight. It wouldn't shock me at all. I just think it's an absolute have to have for them, or this thing snowballs out of control. All right, I got 30 seconds. Here, I wanted to ask you this because you are a Minneapolis, you're a Twin Cities guy, you're a Vikings guy, and I saw the news that Tommy Kramer was diagnosed with dementia. That's sad, and wish him the best. I was curious, though, for Vikings fans, after Tarkington, who's the next guy? Is it Kramer?
It's Cousins and then Kramer. You have to go to the 80s for Tommy Kramer's era, but he was the starter for 8 or 9 years here.
Yeah.
And he played well, got the team into the playoffs, but never really got them, you know, advanced through the playoffs. He had a strong arm, a lot of moxie, and he would get absolutely hammered after every game and go out to bar hopping. This town is legendarily filled with people's stories of drunk Tommy Kramer after games and stuff. And that really became, sadly, a defining part of his life. And for the 20 or so years, 30 years since his playing days ended, and only recently stopped drinking and sort of got his life kind of, you know, kind of back together again. Sad story. And man, he took some beatings. There was a play for Tommy Kramer that I remember as a kid from the mid early 80s. He got hit hard on a sack and he convulsed on the field. He had a seizure on the field, and it was like nothing I've ever seen since then. And it was terrifying in the moment.
Yeah. But you would have, so you, the most polarizing quarterback of our last 10 years and your last five, you think would be number two behind Tarkington?
Yeah. Because it, which says a lot about the, you know, we just haven't had a franchise quarterback here in Minnesota. We might, right. You know, maybe we do now. Maybe it's Sam Darnold. Maybe it's J.J. McCarthy. We don't know. The Vikings have a fact. If J.J. McCarthy continues at this pace, and right now he's one of two guys in the MVP conversation, if he continues
Darnold,
at this pace.
Not J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, Sam Darnold. Thank you.
Yep.
The Vikings have a fascinating offseason decision to make. Like, do you franchise Sam Darnold? I mean, what do you do then? How do you leverage that into some kind of equity as a return if Sam Darnold's on your team? I don't know. That'll be. It's cart before the horse. It's only week three. But if this continues, it'll be a fascinating situation.
I also think if they continue to have a good season, it's going to be a very interesting look at what, you know, when you have a guy who's really good but not elite, but you're paying him several of those years like he's elite, it may not be the best way to go, because what they were able to do with the money they didn't give to Kirk, Greenard, I'm missing the other defender that they paid big money to.
Danielle Hunter was let go. I'm not sure.
Right, but Van Ginkle. I love what Van Ginkle's done. Van Ginkle, Greenard. You know, in the additions, I mean, they basically got four or five major contributors out of Kirk's money, right?
Yep. And I wanted them to keep Kirk, but not at what he signed for the Falcons. I mean, the Falcons gave him, you know, elite quarterback money on and a 4-year deal, which was nuts.
Right. Thanks, as always. Enjoy the football. Talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
We got somebody coming on to talk Arizona Cardinals next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. Jumping on with us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, Bet Smarter, Beat the Books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com is Tyler Drake. Tyler covers the Cardinals out in Arizona for Arizonasports.com. You can follow Tyler on X, on Twitter, at TDrake4, the number 4, sports. So, how big of a story is it out there that Cliff Kingsbury's returning to where he coached for a few years, and by the way, coached Kyler Murray?
Well, yeah, thanks for having me on, first off. But yeah, I would say it's definitely a storyline for sure. Obviously, Cliff had quite a few years here and came in with Kyler, package deal back in 2019. I think also having Jaden back in the desert is another part to that storyline, just because of his time with the Sun Devils before transferring to LSU and winning the Heisman and being who he is now. So yeah, a lot of familiar faces this week, and definitely Cardinals fans and ASU fans both have an idea of who's on that other sideline for sure.
Tyler, I mean, we kind of, Phoenix is a weird sports market, but you're out there covering it. I mean, there are, you know, four major pro sports teams. Where does Arizona State football rank in the, you know, sports importance hierarchy?
Yeah, it's up there. I think, you know, with the Coyotes going to Utah now, I would say that the Sun Devils have moved up a little bit in that ranking. So there's still, it's still a team out here, a top team that a lot of people like to follow along. If I had to do like a list, I'd probably go Cardinals, Suns, D-backs, ASU.
Big 12. I mean, the whole thing of, you know, when you have a team in your market for so long and they move out of a league that it's been in forever, it's just weird. But they're off to a pretty good start. I think they lost to Texas Tech last week. But watch that game early on against Mississippi State. Had no idea how bad Mississippi State was at that point. All right. Tell me what Kyler Murray said when he was asked about the differences between Cliff's offense and the offense right now with Drew Petzkin.
Yes, yes. So I'll try to say exactly what he said. He said one offense, one system relies on certain things, and the other offense relies on other things. And after that, it was more about what he did after the comment. It was the wink that he had right after. I don't know if that was to signal, hey, I knew what you guys were asking, or, hey, I got around this question without really diving into the nitty-gritty of both systems. But it definitely was something that a lot of us kind of, I mean, we were having a couple laughs in the press conference room just knowing that he did that, and he even kind of laughed like, I don't really know how you guys wanted me to answer that. I think he said that right away, right after. But yeah, that was the gist of what he said. So you can read between the lines there. Obviously, Kyler.
Well, how would I wouldn't know how to read between the lines. What okay, do you think? Exactly. Was his relationship a good one with Kingsbury or not?
I think it was a good one. I think it probably soured there towards the end. I think just in general, I think the whole entire regime there at the end kind of soured and needed to be a change. I think the thing that I went to right away was how Kyler has talked time and time again about how this offense, he doesn't have to go out and be Superman anymore. He doesn't have to go out there and do things himself to make this team win or be close to winning or be in a position to win. Like, they can rely on the run offense to get going. They can rely on other pieces. It's not, Kyler Murray against the Raiders when he had to run around and scramble for like a minute and a half on a two-point conversion to win the game kind of thing. Like, there's all of these other factors now, whereas I feel like that's been the biggest difference, where with Cliff, he had to be Superman. He had to be the guy that put everybody on his back to win the game, and now that's no longer the case. So me reading between the lines, that's what I took away from it. Who knows, though? Maybe he was just obviously just kind of pushing that to the side and giving us a non-answer that really we couldn't go with, but I felt like the wink kind of said a lot more than the quotes at that moment.
All right, let's talk about the start to the year. They had a shot. They had a two-score lead, I think a 14-point lead at Buffalo. Lost that game, blew out a depleted Rams team, but it was the same depleted Rams team that came back and beat the 49ers and then had a competitive a game against Detroit. I think, you kicked a field goal late on. Did you get the ball back down seven? Did you have a chance down seven in that game or not?
I don't think so. I think they were able to convert there at the end.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I didn't think so. But give me your overall summary of what the Cardinals have been through three games.
Yeah, much improved. I think the 1-2 record, obviously, that's not the greatest. But you go out there and kind of exercise some ghosts against the Rams, 42-10. That was an absolute beatdown, 41-10. Absolute beatdown there, and something that needed to happen. I mean, the Rams have had their number since, especially at home, since like 2014. Like, they just had not been able to beat them, especially at home. And then you've got these two playoff, potentially Super Bowl contenders in the Bills and the Lions. Like, I really thought that the Cardinals had a great shot in week one to knock off the Bills, but that offense fell apart in the second half. And then I think a lot of the same against the Lions. They really came out firing that first opening drive. They were going back and forth, and then, again, the offense started to sputter. I thought the defense did really well in that second half against the Lions. If they can bottle some of that up moving forward, that'll say a lot about them moving forward. But they also have to, make up for the loss of a guy like Justin Jones, who's been starting in the middle of their defensive line, or right off the edge on the defensive line for the past three games. So they've got some depth issues there. They've got some depth issues at right tackle right now with Kelvin Beachum dealing with a little hamstring injury. Jonah Williams is on the IR. So there's some spots along the line that can be exploited. But I think all in all, this is a much improved team than they were last year. They've got to put some wins together, though, to really shore up that thinking. I think there's about two plays, I'd say, from the Lions where they could have gotten back, one being that interception and double coverage to Marvin. That could have been a huge game changer. The Mack Wilson interception pick six right at the 2-minute warning. I know it's iffy, it's questionable, but those two plays right there, huge swing in points. And that could have really, we could be looking at a really, really interesting matchup from a record standpoint entering this week. But it's going to be very interesting to see how they come out and kind of respond after knowing how close they've been those two losses.
I'm just curious. I think we feel the loss of Austin Ekeler this weekend will be a big one. He's been exceptional in the first three games. Is Trey McBride going to play? And if not, how big of a loss is that?
Yeah, it would be a huge loss if he doesn't go. We'll probably get some more info today if he's out there practicing in a non-contact jersey, similar to what Max Melton did about a week or two ago. That will be a good sign forward, just knowing that he's at least getting back out on the field, and that I would assume the next step is him getting out of there completely. But yeah, huge loss if he can't go. He's one of the top, I'd say top five, top 10 tight ends in the league. He really hasn't exploded on the scene so far. I think that's going to change here eventually. He's very much, I think he could have a career year just knowing that he's no longer behind a guy like Zach Ertz, who's in Washington now, and just having the opportunities and growing that bond with Kyler. If he can't go, it's going to be a lot of Elijah Higgins, who used to be a wide receiver for the Dolphins, and then they transitioned him to a tight end. He's now here, and then you've got Tip Ryman, who's more of a blocking tight end. So it'll be really interesting to see how they implement things. Obviously, I would assume Elijah gets more of those pass-catching opportunities, but you can never rule out Tip. I think he's got a little more game than people think. So it'll be interesting to see. I really think Trey, if I had to put a guess on it, I think he comes back this week. But obviously, until we know more, until we see him at practice, that's going to be up in the air.
Tyler Drake from ArizonaSports.com joining us right now. So tell us about Kyler Murray. And is this a big year for him? I mean, he's been banged up. He's missed a lot of games the last 2 years. I would imagine just playing 17 would be huge this year. But, you know, where is this headed with Kyler Murray, do you think?
Yeah, I think this is a big year just because he got that full offseason healthy, was able to really go dive into the system away from just jumping into it and going middle of the year. He's really taken on it. I think something that's really impressed me with him is his ability or his wherewithal off the field to really engage with his teammates and his players. He took a lot of playmakers out to L.A. this offseason and did like a 48-hour, you know, regimented mini camp kind of thing with, I think, 13 other guys. And you can just tell that side of thing. That's been a lot of what people out here have been wanting to see from Kyler, is that leadership, that maturity on display. I think that he has had that at times, but he's not that rah-rah guy. He's not that guy who's going to go out there and be front and center. Like, he's very much a behind the scenes, kind of lead by example. And I think now he's got these guys that he can relate a little bit more with, as opposed to some of the older vets when he came in, where now it's, yeah, we're all going together as one instead of, hey, I'm playing catch up, or, hey, I'm the guy that's, they're going to rely on me more than you guys. But at the end of the day, you're still the vet. So I think that part has been a huge step forward. I think he's more in lockstep with the regime, with this regime and the front office and the head coaching and the coaching staff in general. Well, or way more than he was with the previous regime. It just seems like everybody is on the same page. But yeah, the wins have to be there. He's got to be healthy. He's got to really show that he can be this franchise quarterback that, you know, Jonathan Gannon, Monty Osford, all of these guys have praised him and said that, yes, he is the guy, but he's really got to go show it. I mean, he's got all the weapons. He's got one of the best, you know, obviously you've got to see some more from Michael Wilson, from Greg Dortch, but these guys that he's got now, I'd say, is one of top to bottom, one of the better offensive arsenals that he's had in his career. So really, he's just got to go out there and make sure he gets some of these wins, because that's really what everybody's going to judge you at the end of the day, is these wins. He's healthy. You can see that he's got his game back, but now he's got to translate that all to getting W's and not being a team that's going to be stuck in the 4-6 win range every year.
A good start after the opener for Marvin Harrison Jr. I think every football fan understands the talent that you have at wide receiver. I'm curious, though, about the other side of the ball. Washington, you probably know this, they haven't punted in 2 weeks. They haven't turned the ball over in 2 weeks. They've scored on every single possession, 13 straight possessions in two games, which is nearly unheard of. What kind of challenge does Arizona's defense present?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be very much, I'm interested to see, because they just lost Justin Jones for the year with a triceps injury. He's been a starter there. That means that Dante Stills is probably going to step in, or maybe some LJ Collier is going to get some more looks. But yeah, it's threatening. If the pass rush can show some of what they did in the second half, that's going to go a long way, I think. But there is some holes. I mean, the run defense has been something that even in going back to last year, has been a huge, huge worry. And losing a guy like Jones, I mean, just losing a starter there is tough. I mean, Darius Robinson is still on the IR. He can't come back and help at all. I would assume when he comes back, if he comes back, he would be inserted right away into that starting lineup. But until then, you've really got to patch together a strong front against a run or a team that knows how to run the ball, especially with their quarterback. Secondary wise, that's another one. That's another hit or miss. I mean, I think if Terry McLaurin and Jaden can find that connection again, it could be a long day. The one side that I really like is the inside linebackers room. I think they really help set the tone. Not taking anything away from Buda Baker and Jalen Thompson at the safety spot, but I just think that secondary as a whole, that's kind of where I lump them. But an inside linebacker, Mack Wilson Sr., he can do a little bit of everything. He can rush off the edge. He can be a really big factor in the middle. Then you've got Kaiser White, who is just a dog. He's going to come and put you in the ground or try to put you in the ground. So that's going to be in the middle of that defense is probably their best bet at trying to stop the run, trying to limit Jaden. And I think they're going to have a lot of work. They're going to have a lot of work on their plate because not only are they going to have to be potentially a spy for Jaden, they're going to have to make sure they're stopping that run game too.
What about Baker? Is he in or out Sunday, do you think?
With Baker, I would say usually just given his resume, I would say he's going to play. I didn't really see him too limited from the open portion. Obviously, it's the open portion, but with him and Marvin, both of them actually looked like nothing was really holding them back. So I thought that was a good sign. Same with a guy like Kelvin Beachum dealing with a hamstring injury. He's their starting right tackle right now. So they were all back. They looked like they were getting some practice reps in. So a good sign there. We'll see how it moves forward. But it's Buda Baker. I'm never going to put it past him to play in a game, even if he's injured.
All right, Tyler, what happens Sunday?
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a tough one. I think it's going to be a really exciting offensive shootout. I really do. I'm going to actually, I think the Commanders are rolling. I think they're really clicking. This is kind of a flashback to, I would say, what Cliff and Kyler did in 2021. Just the early on, just looks like that's what the offense is clicking like. So as much as I think that is the case, I think I'm going to go with the Cardinals on this. I really think they're going to come out with a little more gusto, knowing that it's Cliff, knowing that Jaden's out there too. Just they want to show that this is their home state, their home stadium, which that was one thing Cliff really couldn't do well is win at home, especially that last year. So I'm going to go with the Cardinals this one, but I think it's going to be very close, and it's going to be a really fun game. This is one I've had circled for a while, and it's living up to the potential hype right now.
Thanks, Tyler. Really appreciate the time.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me on.
Yep, Tyler Drake from ArizonaSports.com. All of our coverage today on Team 980 is presented by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com and get a great deal on an iPhone 16 Pro. We'll do some debt and news next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the Team980.com, free and live on the Odyssey app.
Hitting the news you might have missed, it's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, how about some news that hits me right in the childhood? Derrick Rose announcing his retirement from the NBA after 15 years, former MVP. I used to love Derrick Rose. Played in that NCAA championship with Memphis, even though they lost.
He did play in that game and that overtime loss to Kansas. He was really, really good as a young player before, the first serious injury, which happened when? Year two or year three, something like that, right?
Yeah, they were supposed to be the rival, rather, of that Miami Heat team with LeBron, D-Wade, and Chris right. Bosh. And then because he tore his knee up after an MVP year, it never really came to fruition.
Won the MVP, could really, really score, could really run a team. It was exciting for that town to feel good about, the NBA team again. A little bit controversial at times. I'm trying to think of the specific circumstances when basically he didn't want to play in a game. I can't remember specifically what the I'm gonna have to go back and look that one up, but an incredible talent for sure. And then had a chance coming back with the Knicks, and just really too many injuries ultimately for a guy that was an MVP in what his was it his second year, third year that he was the MVP?
I think it was his third year. Let me double check.
What year
that.
Was he drafted? Because they won the title in 2008.
Or
they lost to Kansas.
Yeah, he lost.
That was the 2008 national championship game. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he was MVP in 2011.
Yeah. Okay. So third year in the league.
So third year in the league. Yeah.
Man, time flies. What else?
Netflix is, let me rephrase that. 50 Cent is looking to produce a Netflix documentary on the P. Diddy scandal that is currently unraveling. I don't know how much you follow this, but if you haven't.
I haven't really, other than the baby oil stuff, which was just kind of funny. And the fact that there's all of these promises that a lot of people are going to go down with P. Diddy.
What the lawyer said. In front of, I guess he was sitting in front of the jail. He's at like some iconic prison in Brooklyn. I'm not up to date on my prison history. Sorry. But the lawyer said
you
that.
You need to get up to date on your prison history.
I know what Alcatraz is, but I'm pretty sure Alcatraz.
You ever been on the tour of Alcatraz?
No, I've never been to San Francisco. But there was a show about Alcatraz when I was growing
up.
Yeah, Alcatraz. I just mentioned
Carlos Alcatraz. Alcatraz. I've been on that trip a couple times. I can't believe anybody was able to break out and swim through the channel and survive, but that's a story for another day.
Yeah, story for another day. But the lawyer said that Diddy bought the 1,000 bottles because he lives close to a Costco. I was like, okay. I've been to Costco.
People do stock up.
I love Costco.
You know, Costco.
I was at Costco yesterday. I mean, it's a great deal.
Yeah. I can remember. I don't think we've done Costco in a while, but God, when the kids were young, we did it all the time. And it was like, here comes my wife. She's got the trunk filled up with about, you know, three boxes of paper towels and toilet paper and all, you know, just bulk buys. And I'm like, good God, where are we going to put it all? But we never did the baby oil stock up.
So thank God.
So just because he lived near a Costco, unless there were lots of children in the house. I don't know if there were, but that's a lot of bottles of baby oil.
It's a lot of bottles. First of all, I don't even know if your local Costco has 1,000 bottles of baby oil. That's an insane amount. Yes, he's going to jail.
For a long time, right?
For the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Because his lawyer was like, well, it's just consensual activities. They're like, buddy, that is not what I know he has to like pretend that that's what it is because that's what his client is that's who he's representing. But like the whole thing is that it was not consensual. Like that's the whole premise. Nobody cares if you got 1,000 bottles of baby oil if it's all consensual. But it wasn't. You were trafficking people. That's kind of the whole gist of the thing.
Yeah. Not good. What else?
Also, the Vince McMahon documentary dropped on Netflix. I know you're not a wrestling guy, but I feel like you would find elements of this crazy individual Vince McMahon.
He's nuts. I mean, what he built is just unbelievable just from a business standpoint, a sports business standpoint, an entertainment business standpoint. I bet I would be interested in that. And you're right. I'm not a big wrestling guy, but obviously one of the, you know, brilliant entrepreneurs and builders of an entertainment product of our time. So I would definitely watch that. That's out?
It's a 6-part documentary. The episodes are roughly 45 to like 54 minutes or so. I liked it because I'm a wrestling guy, but Vince is a psychopath. Like, he is legitimately a psychopath. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, just to see how crazy some of our species can get, watching that documentary would do that for you.
Speaking of docs or Netflix shows, I've heard that this the Menendez show, I think it's called Monsters, which might be one of the top. I know The Perfect Couple, a lot of people are watching that. But I've heard I think it's called Monsters. It's the Eric and the brother's name, I think was Lyle, Menendez story, which is a story that I think anybody of a certain age remembers. I mean, they murdered their parents. But I've heard it is great. And I don't know how many episodes it is, but it may be something that I delve into. But I can't dive into anything during football season. It's impossible.
It's impossible.
Like, what am I gonna do? Tonight, I'm interested in one thing, Cowboys-Giants. We've had some good Thursday night games to kind of look forward to. on the schedule so far. Last week we had Aaron Rodgers. The week before that was, I'm forgetting, the opener, obviously, we watched Ravens Chiefs.
It was Bills Dolphins week two. So Bills, Josh Dolphins. Allen and Tua.
Yeah, Tua's injury. Next week, you get you know who against the Bucks. 49ers Seahawks coming up. Broncos Saints. Vikings Rams. Just looking at the Texans Jets down the road. God, the Jets play an unbelievable number of national television games.
Yeah, that Aaron Rodgers owes them. But also because of that, like, you get college
football. They doubled down, you know, from last year because they got burned by it last year. But they have coming up a London game next weekend, a Monday night game when they get back against the Bills, a Sunday night game against Pittsburgh, then another Thursday night game against Houston on Halloween night. They got a Sunday night game against Indy before their bye week, which comes Thanksgiving weekend, actually. And then, you know, there will be flex opportunities after that. We were joking the other day, kind of joking, not really joking, but you get another Jaden Daniels performance or two that even resembles the one on Monday night. And if the team's even hovering around 500 with a chance, you're going to get some late season, I'm not going to say games plural, but at least one game will be flexed into Sunday night where they are not scheduled to play you know, a primetime game. The only primetime game left on their schedule is the Thursday nighter at Philadelphia, November 14th. And they're not even in a high profile 4 o'clock window.
Right.
A game at this point. So some of those could get flexed to that as well. They play the Cowboys in November. They play the Eagles and the Cowboys in two of the last three games. But wouldn't surprise me if you get another JD Cincinnati game if you get a game or two flexed at the end of the year. Gotta be
good.
Hovering around 500.
Yeah, gotta be good.
Yeah. All right. There was an interesting revelation yesterday about the 2012 season. You'll hear it when we come back. Power rankings next hour as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.